So tonight we're going to have a Dharma talk from Diane Fitzgerald, who's a senior Dharma teacher in Boundless Way Zen, and is also the Shuso for this Ango retreat. The loose translation of Shuso, as we learned the first evening of Ango, is the main problem. And the colloquial meaning, of course, is the head student and the one who handles everything with the cooperation of all beings.
Thank you. And so thank all of you for coming to this evening practice period during our Ango. It's one of the most delightful things about this three-week practice period is to see people coming and going, weaving in and out of their busy lives and returning here to our peaceful dwelling place, which is what Ango means, peaceful dwelling place. And during this Ango, we've been exploring a text by the great Zen teacher Dogen from the 13th century. And Dogen's text is Bodhisattva's Four Methods of Guidance, which is a text that he wrote for his lay practitioners. He wrote it for us. And it sings through all those ages, right here to this very night. So sometimes when you first approach it, the words seem mystifying. And one of the Dharma talks in the very beginning by guiding teacher Josh Bartok, the suggestion was to approach it as you would an abstract painting. So maybe not so sensible to your thinking mind, but something about it speaks to you, maybe awakens your heart and your enthusiasm. So much the same way we approach Dogen's writings. And this week, so we're in the middle of the Ango. First, in the beginning we talked about guidance on giving, and this week we've been talking about kind speech. And I thought tonight I would focus on a few sentences here that spoke to me from this piece. So it reads, "If kind speech is offered, little by little, virtue will grow. Little by little." And I think Dogen is asking us to treat kind speech the same way that we do our zazen, our practice. And little by little, as we practice more and more, we return to our center, our awakened nature. And the kind speech is not meant to be something that we construct. So it is something that develops from practice, from returning over and over again to this moment. So as our thoughts arise and we get carried away by them and notice them, returning again to being present with just what is arising right now. And Dogen writes, "Thus even kind speech which is not ordinarily known or seen comes into being." So you might say that he's saying that kind speech is not something that we construct. It's not the kind of New Age kind speech that we hear people use frequently, which is, you know, kind of blah. But sometimes when we hear it, you know, we can feel that person is really searching for something, but it just rings hollow when we hear it. And sometimes kind speech can, at its worst, even be kind of passive-aggressive, you know. So, "Dear, wouldn't you like to pick up your shoes that are all over the house?" so that sends a doesn't send a message of kindness, does it? And we know it when we hear it. And so the invitation is that this practice of kind speech is when we encounter another being, we might have all kinds of thoughts and opinions about that person that could arise, you know? Maybe we're irritated, maybe we're annoyed. And yes, irritation in that moment, yes, irritation. But the invitation is to return to this very moment, this very encounter with that person, bring as much as we can to being present to that encounter. And out of that presence arises kind speech. So not something that we make up, not some sort of standard that we have to adhere to or some ideal that we strive for, but instead a returning to this very moment, our awakened nature responding to the other person's awakened nature. And out of that mysteriously arises speech that the other person apprehends and that we apprehend without any kind of having to do anything about it. You should be willing to practice it for this entire present life. Do not give up world after world, life after life. So, just like our practice of Zazen, our practice of kind speech, never ending, always returning, world after world. So in our busy worlds of work and family and here and wherever we go, always practicing as best we can, being present to that which arises. Life after life, each person that we encounter, as best we can, being present to them and to ourselves. Kind speech is the basis for reconciling rulers and subduing enemies. We have no idea of what effect our speech might have on others. We can imagine things, and we can think we know, but we really have no way of knowing our profound effect on other beings that we interact with in the world. And so it is with a leap of faith that we practice our kind speech, returning to this moment, and leave to the universe that which cannot be explained. Thank you very much. So our tradition here is now to say our names and say them so kind of not stepping on the next person's name. So so I am Diane.
I'm Melissa.
Steve.
Fran.
Matt.
Ed.
David.
Kaden.
Ryan.
Kay.
Tua.
Candice.
Joseph.
Deb.
Marie.
David. So I invite you to sit comfortably. And this is the time for questions or observations about kind speech, about the talk, about practice.
I like that you touched on this, and I think everyone who's spoken about kind speech has touched on it as well. The idea that even though we don't know exactly what effect we'll have on other people, nonetheless, we reach out and touch someone. And sometimes it goes beyond the words. You know, they can be kind words, but you know, sometimes it's something, you know, it's beyond words and text.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's miraculous. Even if I can't absolutely know what's going on inside your head, I can know that I've touched you and that you've touched me, and that's so wondrous.
I was thinking of Diane became president of our leadership council, so the Boundless Way Zen is a large nonprofit with lots of different things in it. And as we moved in and started practicing here at the temple, Diane took over the board. And there were lots of issues about what was going on and how to do it, and lots of people had lots of questions. We all did. Well, you know, what are we doing? How do we work together? And Diane, I just, you know, would overhear you having conversations with people and always being respectful, always sort of honoring people. And they weren't sort of the big speeches you made in front of everyone that had the impact, but that consistent willingness to meet people where they were, I think is part of the reason we're sitting here today. So, thank you.
My sense of your capacity for that, and I think Ed's pointing to it too in a slightly different way, is that there's this underlying sureness of our connection. Right? So that when you feel kind speech coming from someone, either through words or through actions, when you feel touched by somebody, or you feel that you're touching somebody, it's because you know for a fact that there really is a connection between you. And it's not some, you know, new agey thing about, oh my gosh, we're all so connected. But this other kind of, you know, we're all breathing together, we're living together, we're human together. And that really, when someone knows that, it comes forth.
It seems to me, and this just occurred to me, that a big part of it is getting your own ego out of the way. So if you can remove your own ego, then it's much easier to meet the other person rather than feel like you've got to make your point or preserve some identity or image that you have of yourself in exchange.
I just thought of a great money-making scheme for the temple. It's to make little ego removal kits. Put them in a little box. I don't know what would be inside them, but it would be a lot of fun.
Do you think people would buy them?
People have bought lots of crazy stuff.
Yeah. A lot of people are very attached to their ego.
That's true. Yeah.
It's a little close to Scientology.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Forget it. Out the window. See you at the end of that.
It works for them.
You know? Yeah. That's true.
But to say a little more for Anne, so, like, for me, what happens often is that, you know, I'll have thoughts, so I'll have emotions, you know, I'll have an opinion about somebody, I'll be irritated, and then that thought can be so gripping, you know, as though this is me, you know, like, and so one of the phrases we use in Zen is opening the hand of thought. So the thoughts feel like they're just so tight around us, and if we can just loosen up that hand a little bit, you know, and let the thought kind of go on its own, you know, and learn that we are not our thoughts, you know. Even if we don't really believe that, if we can just pretend we believe it, even just for a little bit, you know, the thoughts kind of loosen up a little. And then instead of being, I'm irritated, you know, it's like, okay, breathe, you know. Here's the person, you know, here I am right this minute, you know. So I think you're right, like, that's the ego, the irritation and all. Not that it's not real, you know, you feel it,
right.
But that I'm not just irritation. Although, you know, some people walk around like they are irritation, you know, like all the time. That's what, you know, their way of being is, and it's sad, very sad. So that's what we try to, that's what we're doing here. It's like, we don't want to be, you know, just a like walking definition of irritation. You know? Yeah. You know, so thanks. That's, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I think that point about this opening the hand of thought, that we are not our thoughts, is such a key discovery here. Such a, you know, most of us, we feel like we are our thoughts. So when anger arises, we feel like this is the way the world is, and I'm, you know, I've got a real reason for being pissed off, and we think it's hard to see that we're being gripped, or that we're in the grips of something. But this possibility that we can have these thoughts, and they can still have an impact on us, but we can let them come and go. We don't have to defend them. We don't even have to try to push them away. And I think we've sort of been running down the New Age here this evening.
Yeah, exactly.
I sort of want to. What I think about the intention is sometimes there's a kind of positivism that's like, that doesn't acknowledge the true difficulty of things. So some lovely intention to see the beauty in this world and to see the possibility for human beings. But I think in Zen, we want to be able to look at everything, both the things that are sweet and light and the things that are really difficult. And every human being I know gets pissed off, frustrated, agitated, and there's no way you can think your way out of that. I've never met anyone. I've met people who, most of the time, they're really, really nice, but they scare me just a little bit, because if you've ever been with somebody really, really nice when they've used up their store of really, really nice, there's a whole lot of other stuff there, too.
So, I'm very interested, Diane, how, you know, whether you find that you actually can be irritated in an encounter with someone, and in that moment of irritation, be able to see it and somehow get it to relax its grip. I'm one of these people that you're talking about that watch irritated quite a bit of time. And I think I come by it honestly.
Because the world is irritating.
That too. But I was going to say that I'm in pain a lot of the time, and I think that being in pain and short on sleep, much like a retreat, can you know, force me into a state where I'm very reactive, you know, and it's very hard for me to, you know, I can see it when I'm sitting on the cushion, you know, I can watch it come up, and there's enough space to see it and you know, let it release a little bit. But in the, you know, in the moment of actually interacting with people, it rarely, you know, I rarely find that I have the space in that moment, and then later on I'll think, ooh, that wasn't very kind of you to react that way, you know. But it's very rare for me to have that actually, you know, come up in the moment. So I wonder if you could say something about that.
Well, my experience with you, Steve, is that you are not irritable. You have a sweetness, a sweet irritability about you. that's very lovable, and I think you're right that when we're in pain, physical pain, and when we're tired, you know, I was really tired yesterday, you know, and we're just so dependent on these bodies of ours, you know, and when they hurt, and when we are sick, and when we're tired, just so hard, you know. So, I think all we can do is our best, right? To so So me sitting on the cushion, I'm tired, come back. Tired and tired. Come back, yeah. So with whatever conditions we find ourselves in, you know. I mean, sometimes we're in a situation where, you know, we're really angry at somebody, and it just like, you know, maybe we can't do it then, you know. And other times we're just sort of mildly irritated, and we can say, oh yeah, you know, come back. So, and that's why I think of Dogen's piece as really being about practice. You know, he doesn't expect us to be virtuosos at this, you know, and get it and we're done, you know. It's, I mean, he talks about life after life. I mean, this is a commitment that we carry on with forever. And that's our bodhisattva vow.
I want to add to that. I won't reveal the content of this story, I promise, but you told me earlier in the retreat about a situation where you were really upset, and you just opened to the upset. And it didn't actually go away, but it allowed you to not be just the upset, so that you were able to function and actually encounter another person with kindness, with true kindness, not fakey, as you said, passive-aggressive kindness. And I think that for me, that, you know, my own experience of this is that in the middle of an intense storm of upset, whether it's physical or emotional or cognitive, doesn't matter, it's really hard to not be completely blinded by it. It's just the way we are constructed as human beings. But as you pointed out, in sitting, in this meditation practice, we actually get to be with those things. We can't react when we're sitting. So the container of that not reacting allows us to both be completely in it and see it at the same time. And that's the practice we carry forward into our encounters with other people in the world. So that it's... you can't say, I'm going to be with this upset in order to get rid of it, because that doesn't work. It's just feeding more energy to it. But to say, okay, the practice is to be with it. And as Diane mentioned, and this is a metaphor we use a lot, opening the hand of thought just means just loosening the grip of it a little bit. It might just stay there for hours, days, months, years. But eventually, because the hand is open, it'll go on its way. Once we stop trying to get rid of it, it just has, you know, everything is energetic, has a life of its own. So yeah, I can already see that. So this is just back to this world after world, life after life. It's unending. And yet, there's a little sense of the familiarity. Oh, this again. This again.
Phew. And sometimes I can even see that. I can begin to see myself, you know, reacting, but I can't do anything about it, you know. But there's this little voice that says, you know, you really shouldn't be doing, but not enough to, you know, to really change it.
No. Sometimes you're just stuck in it forever. We had David and I had a person we used to do counseling with who introduced us to the term realms, which she's a Buddhist therapist, and. The when you get into one of these realms, you can't get out of it because you can't see outside of it. But it self-releases. So all you need to do is wake up in the middle of it. Know you're in hell when you're in hell.
I think that just following on this, you know, our practice is not trying to control ourselves. It's so easy to think that, you know, so we can approach kind speech as, all right, I won't say what I'm really thinking. I think we're encouraged here to be present to our life as it is, which is quite different than what we might imagine it should be. And I think this is true for all of us. It doesn't matter how long you've practiced Zen. My life, I think I should be different lots of times than I am. And this can lead to the temptation of wishing really hard and just trying to ignore everything else. I am a very nice, relaxed person. I am a very nice, relaxed person. So there's something so important about the honesty of when we're stuck, not to pretend we can do something we can't. And the real humility of that in some, that we really are practicing being real, practicing being alive, and have some faith that the way out is not about manipulation. The way to freedom is not about trying to control ourselves, but about, you know, as Melissa and Diane were saying, about being with what's here. And when we have a choice, to make the choice. And when we don't, to realize, wow, here I am. And this is about rousing the mind of compassion. So important when we're training to have compassion. So important being a human being, to have compassion for our angry self, our sad self, our agitated self, you know, whatever. We all have these selves that are quite difficult. And that these selves are the doorway in. That's the teaching, that, like, what? This is not about getting rid of that. This is about being in relationship to this, to ourselves, being aware in some new way.
Yeah. I wish that you would talk a little bit about the muddled self, because I work with that a lot. And getting in touch with it seems so different from getting in touch with something that's more definitive. So I'm confused or muddled, and then there just doesn't seem to be any place to move with it. And I think I understand that confusion isn't exactly the opposite of knowing, because it's more like when you need clarity, and that clarity comes from what you were talking about, being in tune with what is. But when you're confused, it is hard to find that. And I would like to hear some comments about it.
Yeah, me too.
Hot seat.
It's just going to keep getting hotter and hotter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, confusion. What's that? we've talked a lot about the confused mind these last several days, and pretty much everyone here is in the same boat with you, you know? And one of the talks that Melissa gave was about the practice in Japan with Eheiji, the monastery.
Oh! Yes.
which was Dogen's monastery. And there's a big statue of Dogen there. And it is the job of one of the monks to get up at 2:30 every morning. I really resonate with that. I wake people up.
Yeah, we just have to get up before everybody.
And I always say, I'm glad it's not 2:30. And so he gets up and he speaks to the statue, and he says the Japanese equivalent of, I am so confused, to Dogen. So this monk, dedicating his life to practice, to taking care of the image of Dogen, wakes up every morning and says to him, "I'm so confused." And then what he does is wash the face of the statue. So, not knowing what to do, he knows how to wash the face. That's all he knows.
And I might add here, we were talking about working with irritated mind, and you're bringing in muddled mind, and those are two of the three poisons. The third one being, it's a version of ignorance. So greed is the other one, of course, and it appears that greed and anger are easier to work with, but really, it's all the same kind of surrender as just what. It's really surrender. Surrender to muddled, complete muddlement. Surrender to irritation. Surrender to desire. And so in a way, as you were talking, Deb, when you first asked the question, my thought was, whoa, it's much harder to work with being muddled. But in a way, it's less confusing to work with that because you could think, if you were angry or if you were greedy, that you could work with that. With muddled mind, you know you can't. So it's kind of like a quicker route in to this just being with.
Yeah, some people are so lucky.
Yeah. I'm feeling really greedy now.
Oh, you say angry.
Three points.
Here we are, right? Three points right here.
I don't want to be confused.
I want to be angry.
And it's kind of like trying to talk in your sleep. That's what it feels like to me. Yeah. Like I need to respond, or part of it is physical, and part of it is just, I think, my nature.
Yeah.
That I just have a lot of doubt. Mm-hmm. And when I'm trying to just function with it, it is like I'm talking in my sleep. I'm saying things and I can't find the borders of what I'm saying, really. Mm-hmm. So
same thing that we were talking about here. The work is exactly the same. And the place we habitually get stuck is the worst for us. Right, so people who habitually get stuck in anger, that's the worst place to be stuck. They don't mind being confused so much. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Me, I'm with you. Confusion is really hard for me. I don't mind so much the other things. But so how to bring some awareness to it. We can actually clarify the confusion.
Yes, I am truly confused.
Yes,
I know that I am confused.
Right, and in that.
But I'm not supposed to know.
Oh, there goes the mind clenching.
That's what I'm just demonstrating. Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah, so it goes endlessly.
It goes endless,
but,
endless.
But no.
Right. So what we're doing here is trying to see how our mind works. And all of our minds are the same and all are different. So it's like we're each given a piece of the world to study. Right? So Steve's been given anger, irritation. He didn't ask for that, right? But it arises. You have been given confusion. It's just so we study where we are. We study with what we have because this is our text, this is the Dharma. It seems like, well, this couldn't be it. It's like, I want to get over this so I can begin my Zen practice. Right? The good news and the bad news is that this is your Zen practice.
And another thing about it that is really difficult for me is that I know that I dislike confusion so much that I would rather be angry.
Yeah.
You know, I would rather be angry, I'd rather have a fight than to be confused. You know, I'd rather anything than to be in this state of, you know, I would just want to resolve it even if it's not going to be skillful.
Just exactly what David said. Yeah. So this is the thing, you know, we look around and we think, I want to be like you. I don't want to be like me. Oh no, maybe you. I want to be like you. And it just goes on and on and on and on. But what I think we're all pointing to here, and this is true for everybody in the room, and I'm just going to repeat what David said. This is what we get to work with. This is what we get to work with. Not that, not this, this. So, what an amazing thing. And you know the story that Diane told, it's a translation of an idiom. It actually is just good morning that he's saying.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's right.
And,
yeah.
And what it translates to literally is, I'm in a subservient relationship to you, and I just don't have a clue about what's going on. But he just says good morning.
Yeah.
So that's like code, you know, for people. He just couldn't say good morning to this self that's full of faults, that's struggling so much. Hello, good morning, and then at the end, please treasure yourself. Translates into good night. So this is the practice. Very simple. Hello, anger, confusion, greed, whatever. Good night. Over and over and over and over and over. What an amazing gift we have that we can follow simple instructions like this. Yeah. So I think maybe we can say good night to this Dharma dialogue. Thank you all.
Please treasure yourself.